Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto Chapter 13, Nature of the Enjoyer and Consciousness, text number 24. Yaivam veti purusham prakritim cha gunaisaha sarvata vartamanopi nasa bhuyo bijayate yaivam veti purusham prakritim cha gunaisaha sarvata vartamanopi nasa bhuyo bijayate. Yaivam veti purusham prakritim cha gunaisaha sarvata vartamanopi nasa bhuyo bijayate. Yaivam veti purusham prakritim cha gunaisaha sarvata vartamanopi nasa bhuyo bijayate. Yaivam veti purusham prakritim gunaisaha sarvata vartamanopi nasa bhuyo bijayate. Yaivam veti purusham prakritim cha gunaisaha sarvata vartamanopi nasa bhuyo bijayate. Anyone who yaivam thus veti understands purusham, the living entity, prakritim, material nature, cha, and gunai, the modes of material nature, saha, with, sarvata, in all ways, vartamana, being situated, api, in spite of, na, never, saha, he, bhuyaha, again, abhijayate, takes his birth. Translation, one who understands his philosophy concerning the material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of material nature, is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. Purport, clear understanding of the material nature, the supersoul, the individual soul, and their interrelation makes one eligible to become liberated and to turn to the spiritual atmosphere without being forced to return to this material nature. This is the result of knowledge. The purpose of knowledge is to understand distinctly that the living entity has by chance fallen into this material existence. By his personal endeavor in association with authorities, saintly persons, and a spiritual master, he has to understand his position and then revert to spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness by understanding Bhagavad Gita as it is explained by the personality of Godhead. Then it is certain that he will never come again into this material existence. He will be transferred into the spiritual world for a blissful life of knowledge, blissful eternal life of knowledge. Omiganata mananda saganansana salaka chakshin minitamina tasmasi garave namaha si chaitanya manobhisam sapitamina bhutale sarmupaktamiam didati svapanandikam. So this seems to be the loophole, right? You know loophole? You know this word? So when there's a legal contract and you find some way that you can get around the contract, this is called a loophole. So regardless of his present position, any kind of fallen person who understands his philosophy of the material nature, the living entity, and the modes of material nature, doesn't have to be born here again. Sounds like we find the back door, right? Do you know the verse? Let's say for you. One who understands his philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of material nature is sure to attain liberation. He will not take his birth here again, regardless of his present position. So I was just saying that this seems to be the loophole that a fallen person, if they can figure out, if they can understand this philosophy, that's their ticket. Sounds like a good deal. I was thinking about this today. Is it true? Of course, Krishna says it's true. So, is there some catch? Or let's say, is it possible for somebody who's in a fallen condition to actually understand this philosophy? So, you know, what's going through my mind is, okay, so we know there's some devotees who are not so strict. They're struggling with their senses or whatever. But maybe they like to study the philosophy. They understand it. And so even though they're not strictly following, they don't come back. I don't know. Sounds like it. What do you think?
I think that you must apply this knowledge in life.
So yeah, that's a good way of understanding. So Prabhupada said, for example, hearing means acting. If you don't act, it is if you have not heard. So, okay, we're hearing so many things, and one may repeat it like a parrot, but have they actually heard to the point where they do? It's challenging. For example, you know, when I give my class on spiritual economics, I point out to the fact that most devotees, we don't follow that instruction. Karmanya Vadikaraste Ma Palishu Kadachana, that you have a right to perform your duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. But everybody in this world practically is engaged in fruit of work. So even as devotees, we don't understand that, or at least we don't follow. In fact, some devotees say, well, it's not possible to follow that one at this time. So it's a little unclear, is it true, whether if we simply understand the philosophy, that we won't take birth here again. So what's the point? The point is, let's say like this, what's the point of taking birth? All of the experiences in this material world are actually organized in a way to educate us, to bring us to understanding of the absolute truth. Even the heaven and hell. You remember I gave that class here, right? What happens when we die? Did I give that class? No? Really? I didn't give that class in September when I first came here. Hare Krishna. So anyway, that's one of the classes that I've been giving. I'm almost sure I gave it here, but In that class, I relate, there's a number of books explaining what goes on in the mental world, what is heaven, what is hell. And these books are written by people who developed the ability to be able to go to the mental world in the subtle body, in the mental body. And one of them, Swedenborg, Emanuel Swedenborg, he was a 17th century saint, Christian saint, and he wrote quite a bit about heaven and hell. And in his book, he relates that people generally think, like we think in our three-dimensional space, that if we go to heaven, it's like we get in the car and we go down to Rijeka or something, you know, or you drive over to Venice. So we go to this place called heaven, and or we go to that place called hell. But it actually doesn't work like that. In fact, how it works is that one experiences the heaven that is already within them, or the hell that is already within them. Okay, in other words, according to my consciousness, the consciousness that I've developed in this life, when I leave this body and the mental body and go to the mental world, the consciousness becomes manifest externally as a experience, as my reality. So that I can only experience the heaven that is already within me. That becomes externally manifest, or the hell that is already within me. And therefore, the idea is that one should develop their consciousness, and according to how we develop the consciousness, that determines the place that we go to after this life. And of course, the idea for us is to develop Krishna consciousness. That means to be conscious of Krishna, to do everything for Krishna, to perform our actions for the pleasure and satisfaction of Krishna. And in this way, I have God within me, right? So if I'm thinking all the time of God, of Krishna, that consciousness can manifest. Or let me put it another way. What is good? We talk about good and evil. And actually, the definition of good is God. Krishna, God, is all good. And to the degree that he is present in a person or in this world, that will be reflected in the activities of the person or of the world. To the degree that God is not present, then there is what we call evil. So it's like light and darkness. So, for example, we turn off all the lights in here. If there's no source of light, then there's darkness. And if we put on one small light, okay, a little bit of light, or a little more, like that. So it's like this, that God is all good, and when God is present, then there's no room. It's like, you know, you can't bring any amount of darkness to cover up even the smallest light. So we can't bring in evil to counteract good, but rather evil is the absence of good. So what we want to do is become Krishna conscious, allow Krishna to be within us and allow Krishna to be manifest through our activities. I was thinking of this in relationship to the early days of ISKCON. I just finished reading one book written by Gurudas Prabhu. You may know Gurudas. You've heard of his name. He was instrumental in, he was one of the first devotees in San Francisco Temple. Then he went with the other devotees to establish the London Temple. And then he was very much instrumental. He was the manager for building the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. So he wrote a very nice book about the early days. And I just finished reading that book. And I was very impressed with how the devotees at that time, their only motivation, of course, because they had a lot of association with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was really everything to them. You have to remember there was no books at that time. They had nothing to go on except Swamiji, whatever Swamiji Prabhupada would tell them. And of course, they could understand simply by hearing from him that he was giving them the absolute truth. And so they were very devoted to him and very much dedicated all of their activities to him. Whatever he would say, they would do without any question. It was just like, you know, there was no question about saying no or refusing him. And so it was, it's this complete surrender either to Krishna or to Krishna's devotee, the spiritual master, that allows that goodness, that godness, to be present. And of course we know from, perhaps you may know, or, you know, from the stories of those times, many of the devotees will say it was a very magical time in that, you could see Krishna's hand working in so many ways. In the story when they were establishing the London Temple, oh yeah, they went there to London. Their idea was, okay, we'll go to London and we'll meet the Beatles, and with our connection to the Beatles, we'll be able to establish Krishna consciousness. Of course, that was a big, you know, pipe dream, as they say, you know. Of course, at that time, everybody wanted to meet the Beatles, you know. As one of them said once, in a joking way, were more popular than Jesus, which was taken very badly by the press. But it was somewhat true. So everybody wanted to meet the Beatles, but how were they going to meet the Beatles? So they went there, and they endeavored in some ways. Like they would, they were making an apple pie. Let's say Yamuna was cooking an apple pie every day. And for 1 week, they brought apple pie to Apple Studios, right? And so they were trying different things like that. And I think it was George, he had a program of inviting people, or maybe it was all of them. The Beatles had a program of inviting people to come to them and give suggestions about how to change the world. And so they tried different kinds of things with that event that they would get the attention of the Beatles. But it didn't happen like that. The way it happened actually was that Shyamasundar, and let's see, when they lived in San Francisco, Gurudas, he lived across the street from the Grateful Dead. And Shyamasundar, he knew one person that was the manager for some other band. I forget which band, some big band. But of course, at that time, they were a small band. They weren't, you know, they had not become a big name. So they had known these people personally. So anyway, they had made their own efforts to connect with the Beatles, and they weren't being successful with that. But then they got a call, or somehow or other found out from their friends in San Francisco that some of them who were had become now famous musicians were coming to London to meet the Beatles. And so they called them up and asked them to pick them up from the airport. So they went to the airport to pick them up, and a couple of Hell's Angels also came over with them. in the temple at that time, the Hell's Angels were in the building next door. And the Hell's Angels would, of course, they got to know the devotees. When the devotees were doing kirtan, the Hell's Angels, they were banging on the wall like, you know, rocking with the kirtan. And they would serve as the guards, the security at Rath Yatra. You know who Hell's Angels are? Yeah? The bikers, yeah. Anyway, like that. So a couple of the Hell's Angels came over also. And Shyamasundara had a pickup truck. He went to pick them up from the airport, and they put their hogs, their motorcycles, in the back of the pickup truck, and everybody came over to the temple. Anyway, so somehow or other, it worked out that there was going to be some kind of meeting, and at the Apple Studios, and one of them called up Shyamasundara to ask him. So he said, "I'm going over to Apple Studios. We're going to, you know, perhaps see the Beatles. Would you like to come along?" And Shyamasundara's going, "Yeah, sure, you know." So they get over there, and of course, it's a big room, you know, like this. It's full of all kind of people and so on. And there, the Beatles are in some back room having a meeting. And Shyamasundara just goes in and sits down on the sofa in the corner. He didn't really want to mix with those people. And after their meeting was over, one by one, Ringo, John, what's the other one?
George.
Not George. Paul. They stuck their heads out, and they saw all those people there, and they ran out the back door. But then George, when he stuck his head out, he saw Shyamasundara sitting on the sofa. And he went, "Oh!" And he made a beeline straight for him. He says, "Where have you been? I've been looking for you." So, I mean, who would have known? I mean, it's these people that they knew from before, and they just happened to be coming over. You know, they'd become famous rock stars. So you can see it was just like the hand of Krishna. The arrangement of Krishna was there to put them together. And immediately George was interested in, because just prior to that they were, you know, they had been associating with, Maharishi. And they were losing interest in him. And but George was on a serious spiritual quest, and so when he met the devotees, he was very eager to have their association. And then things developed in a very nice way. Anyway, so the point is that, you know, that well, because they were surrendered to Guru, and they were actually endeavoring to serve Krishna and Guru, that Krishna, he was acting through them. And this seems to be, so I was relating how I was thinking about this. As I was reading this history from Guru Das, and I was relating to the book by Swedenborg, that because they were very surrendered to Prabhupada, so many magical and wonderful things happened. And Krishna consciousness was spreading like anything. But then, of course, later on, the movement became big, became much bigger. The devotees no longer had personal association with Prabhupada. For example, I came along in 73, and although I saw Prabhupada many times, when he came to the States, he would go to Rath Yatra. We would go to those Rath Yatras to see Prabhupada. So we didn't get close to Prabhupada. There was too many devotees by then. And so Prabhupada only had his close circle, his leaders that he would give his personal association to. Anyway, the point is that as the movement grew at that time, then there was no longer this direct connection with Prabhupada that everybody was just surrendered. Okay, I take that back. I was going to say that everybody was perhaps not so surrendered, but it's not true. The devotees would do anything that Prabhupada wanted. And they were very surrendered. But still, the different kind of motivations would come in. For example, You know, when there's a large group of people, there's naturally, you know, there's social relationships that people have with each other. And so we regard ourselves in relationship to each other. And so, of course, being young boys and girls, there was a lot of ego there. And rather than trying to do things to please, to strictly to please Krishna or Prabhupada, many times there was the ego of, you know, I want to become the big man, or I want to be recognized, or, you know, things like that. In other words, there was not a pure desire to serve either Krishna or the Guru. And so, you know, things began to change in that way. And this is the point that to the degree that we surrender to Krishna, then Krishna is there, is God, is presence is there. And that light of Krishna, it can shine through. But to the degree that we're self-motivated, either by false ego or by, some other material desire, then Krishna, he doesn't have a place to be present. So the point is that, you know, we want to become Krishna conscious. We want to actually, be motivated, by desire to please Krishna, to serve Krishna and to serve Guru. And if this is our sincere desire, and our motivation in everything, then Krishna will come through. He'll act through us. He will use us as his instrument. So, anyway, got off on a little tangent. So, discussion.
This just came on my mind, but I hope it's connected to the class. We're just reading today the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and there was this point about how, you know, a perfect yogi, he just wants to, satisfy the senses of Krishna and, you know, not his own. So when one reads that, you know, you feel, you know, so inspired, and feels, you know, this is the right thing. But then the next moment when you start just, you know, you continue with your casual work, you know, it looks like it completely disappears. So how to, you know, maintain this actually on every step, this mentality.
Yeah, that's quite relevant to the class. That's the point I'm making. It's challenging. This is, did you hear? You could hear? Okay. This is due to our conditioned nature. Because we're conditioned souls, we may take inspiration at one hand, but then very easily we revert back to our conditioned nature. So this is why we have to hear every day. This is why we have to associate. This is why we have our regular sadhana, daily sadhana, so that we refresh ourselves and try to become fixed up in this understanding. So we want to come to the point where we learn how to see Krishna everywhere and see Krishna in everything, see everything in Krishna. But it takes some practice. It takes repeated hearing, it takes purification, because we are not, let's say, our consciousness is clouded by our past activities, our material conditioning. With that is our, let's say, our normal groove. Does that make sense? Groove, you know what a groove is? On the record, you know, the vinyl records, they have a groove that the needle goes in. So that used to be a slang expression in the hippie days, in the 60s, right? You're in the groove. That means you're very easy, you know, it's very natural for you just to be doing what you're doing. So in material consciousness, we're in the groove of material activity, but we want to get into the groove of Krishna consciousness. so that that becomes their natural way of thinking and behaving. And it's a matter of continuing to act in devotional service, to where that becomes our conditioned nature, and we naturally behave as devotees rather than as sense gratifiers. Is that okay?
You were talking about this heaven and hell. So, if I understood right, so there's no such thing as pre-existing, already existing hell or heaven, or you were talking about this our consciousness and how our subtle mind. I mean, we are the ones who create this or something like this.
Yeah, actually, I think it's in the Garuda Purana. There's a statement, this is a discussion with Yamaraj regarding hell. And he's talking about the hell fire. And Yamaraj said, there's no fire here. These people, they bring the fire with them. So, it's, you know, again, when we leave the body, we leave in the mental, leave the physical body in the mental body, and we go to the mental world. And the mental world there, everything, whatever is the content of the mind becomes manifest as an external reality immediately. Desires, they take some time to manifest because the physical dimensions, so you have to pull things together. But there, immediately, as soon as you think of something. So this is what they refer to by the speed of the mind. If you think of a place, immediately you're in that place. Or whatever you think of is immediately manifest. So people who are pious, who are endeavoring to do good, who want to please God, this consciousness manifests as a wonderful experience. Why? Because they're God-like. They're trying to be with God. They're thinking of God. They're trying to please God. And so this is what's good. Without that, let's say, just like if you take away the light, then darkness comes in. So without the light of God, the darkness of evil comes in, and people become more and more evil. So, what was the question again?
So, is there already pre-existing
place? Is there a pre-existing place like that? No, it's not a place. It's a state of consciousness.
But in the fifth canto, we read that there's already existing.
Yeah. So what that means is, in the fifth canto, so there's a description of hell. So what this means is that there's people who are engaged in very sinful activities. What they're doing is creating a mentality, a consciousness in their mind, which is going to later manifest as that kind of suffering. That's the way I take it. I understand it. So that one should avoid those kinds of activities, so that they're not forced to experience that. In other words, they don't develop that consciousness.
Yes. When you were speaking also about it, so we hear this explanation how, you know, the soul comes from the heavenly planet, you know, like in the form of the rain, and then goes to the, you know, grain, and you know, it's like the But what about from, you know, one body to another? We usually just say, you know, takes shelter in another, you know, womb. But are there some description how the soul, you know, goes from, you know, one body and then, you know, again to the semen and again to a new womb? Is there?
Yeah, well, there's something of that explained in some of these books that I've read. I thought I gave that class here, but usually I would think somebody would remember that. Did I give that class, What Happens When We Die? Do you remember? Okay, I'll have to give it again. I did give it in Rijeka, but I thought I gave it here last September, but when I first came. Anyway, I'll give it again. I'm sorry, the question again?
The
movement of living entities. So again, there were several books that I read in regard to this, and they all more or less say the same thing. But basically what happens is, either if a person goes to hell, or if they don't go to hell, if they go to purgatory, where they get some mild purification, after some time, there's a desire, the desires that are unfulfilled become manifest again and cause the living entity to desire to be born in the world. And as a result of that desire, then the arrangement is made to create the next body for them. It can take less or more or less time, depending upon the consciousness of the person, how developed consciousness they had, whether they are sinful or not, and so on. The thing is that, you know, of course, in the mental world, time is different than it is here. It's not measured in the same way. Or let's say there's not the influence of time. So things can go on there, or let's say what may seem to be a long time there may not be very long in terms of our experience. Or it could be the other way too. Is that okay?
I was wondering, you know, because this is very graphically explained, you know, the soul, you know, but so I was also thinking there's also some, you know, maybe this is not even possible to understand in that way, but, you know, how the soul comes to the semen and then...
How the soul comes to the what?
Male semen and then enters the womb.
Yeah, well, that's all controlled by higher arrangement. The movements of the living entities. We have some destiny for getting a particular body, a particular mother and father. And so whatever is necessary to put that together, the demigods they're dealing with. And they can control that somehow or other. What did you get?
You were saying before that there is no hell as such, but the one that we create. And I was wondering, because I think in the sixth canto there was these descriptions of what happens to a soul that was sinful, and there are some procedures and stuff. And how can you understand? Isn't that kind of hell, or is it also metaphorically? I mean, how can we understand that? Because it seems like hell, you know.
No, those sinful persons do experience that hell, okay? But hell is not a place, it's a consciousness, okay? Again, because of our three-dimensional experience, we think of going someplace, like you get in a car and you drive and you go someplace. So it doesn't exist like that, because in the mental world there is no place per se. There's different planes of consciousness, okay? And so people go to the, let's say, what manifests is their experience is, it's their consciousness that manifests as their experience. The consciousness they develop manifests as an experience. So for people who are very sinful, doing those sinful acts creates a consciousness that manifests as that hellish experience. So that's the nearest I can describe it. There's a number of books like that I can tell you. If maybe you want to look at this. Emanuel Swedenborg is, like I said, he was a 17th century or 18th century Christian saint. He wrote a lot of books. In England, they have a Swedenborg Society. Maybe they have one here. His books have been translated into many languages, but they're available online also. So he wrote several books about heaven and hell. Let's see, who else? from Theosophy, Rudolf Steiner, he also had that ability to be able to go to the mental plane, and he also explains heaven and hell. And there is another fellow who wrote many books, also a yogi, Ramacharaka. William Atkinson is his karmi name. He wrote about 100 years ago, he wrote his books. And another one that I read is called Three Examples of After Death Experiences, which was also written 100 years ago. So somebody asked a question about hell in one class, and so I answered it kind of in a way of mental speculation. They said, well, I can't believe God, who must be all kind and loving, could create a hell and send people there forever. So, you know, is hell real or not? And so I answered saying that basically the consciousness that we develop in this life becomes manifest as our experience in the mental world. And I was a little bit speculating about that because, you know, Prabhupada, he doesn't write about that or speak about that because we talk about transcendence, leaving this world. And, but as a result of that, I happened to come into contact with some of these books, and I read several of them. And they all explain like this in a very similar way, how, the heaven or hell that people experience after this life is a heaven or hell that they develop in their own consciousness in this life. And, anyway, they're very interesting to read because it gives some insight into, you know, helping, at least for me, it helped me to understand how it's not really a matter of activity. And we even talk about that. You know, same activity can be done and it can be material or spiritual depending on the consciousness. So what's that consciousness? That consciousness is a desire to please Krishna, desire to please the Guru, desire to do the right thing because it is right. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about a person should do their duty simply because it ought to be done, because it's the proper thing to do. And so these kinds of motivations are, take one to the spiritual side. That is, one is, we could say, internally motivated, not externally motivated in terms of sense gratification or what am I going to get from it or, you know, how will I use this to my advantage? So that's the difference. If I'm self-absorbed, self-motivated, motivated for sense gratification, this is material. If I'm motivated to please Krishna, to do good, because it should be done, to do the right thing, this is internally motivated, and this is spiritual.
I want to go in after, I have to talk to Yamaraj, and I want to know how to maintain a high state of consciousness on these lower planets. Is there possible to get a japa? Are there devotees? Is it possible to get prahlad?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Is that a question or a statement?
No, it's a question.
Okay, say again.
After
you talk to Yamaraj.
I want to go to Yamaraj.
You want to go see Yamaraj?
Yes.
Why?
To discuss my karma.
maybe you don't have. Maybe you don't have to do that. Yeah? We don't read that in Bhagavatam.
But he has mystic powers to send people to other
planets. Yamaraj deals with the sinful people. In fact, he told his messengers, if you read in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, whoever's wearing kundimala, don't go near those people. Don't bring them to me. They're not under my jurisdiction.
Okay.
Stay away from there. Yeah.
I think this thing that you said about creating garbage planets, it was in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jagai Madai, Yamaraj said that he created so many garbage conditions for them after they.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what you said. That
yeah.
It creates according to things
that yeah. Right, according to the consciousness, huh? See, the whole arrangement, if trying to understand this from a different perspective, the whole arrangement of all the creation is done in such a way to motivate people, to motivate the living beings, to educate them, to lift them up, huh? By whatever way is possible. So some people who cannot under, you know, it's like, an animal, perhaps, you know, maybe not even animals. Some people, they cannot understand good instruction. Some people, they cannot even understand punishment. Some people, the only thing they understand is pain. And therefore, that's the only tool that there is for them to experience to push them in the right direction. So if they've disregarded everything, if their consciousness is such that they just disregard any kind of, you know, thought of doing good or not, you know, the instruction of the super soul or whatever, that they just completely ignore everything to the point where, you know, they're completely only going to act for themselves, then the only thing that Krishna has is a tool to push them in the right direction is pain. And so that's what they experience. But the point of it is that's actually, although at the time it seems very real, the fact is that the pure soul is not affected by that. Now some people say that, so what good is hell if you can't remember it? You know, if you could remember it, then yeah, okay, I don't want to go back there. Well, again, we don't remember previous lives or anything prior to this life because it would spoil our effort to enjoy the material experience. However, we cannot say that people do not remember hell because, you know, can we say what is the reason why some people, they naturally don't do the wrong thing or they do the right thing? We can't, it's very difficult to say. So maybe it is that people do remember and, you know, in their mind, you know, when the opportunity comes to do something wrong, they think, no, I better not do that. Why? Maybe they remember, you know, in a very subconscious way, they can remember hell. I don't know. But, anyway, the point is that the whole thing, everything is arranged by Krishna actually to uplift all the jivas, to bring them closer to him. And he uses every opportunity he can to accomplish that, right? So he sends saints, he comes himself, avatars, you know, there's so many preachers, so much encouragement for people. And, you know, even after this life, for people who are, you know, very sinful, okay, they'll get their lesson in hell. But for those who are not so sinful, they go to the state of what the Christians call purgatory, where simply by remembering their previous wrongdoings, their sins, or how they've mistreated somebody or something like that, if they have a conscience, they'll remember that and they'll feel very bad about it. In other words, they go through a purging, a cleansing. That pain of understanding how they've done wrong is a purification of a sort. It's not as intense as hell, but it's still a cleansing that they go through. So anyway, the point is that Krishna, he's always just trying to do nothing but good for the living beings and to bring them back to him, back to the spiritual world.
What about
it's also a presentation of stages of consciousness, all these planets, and the same.
What about the what? Cosmology. I can't say I understand that. You know, how the cosmology is arranged, there's seven lower planetary systems. Okay, does that mean globes, you know, spheres of planets that are floating in space? I don't know. You know, Petri Loca, where is that? I don't understand those things. Somewhere. Oh, I see. The nature of your question is, so if the after this life is the mental world, then what about the description of the cosmology, which is described basically as a physical world? This is what you're getting at. I don't know. I haven't read the fifth canto in a very long time. I'd have to go back and look at that again. So, that's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.